Well, hello there, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of Up the Poshcast. In this episode, we review the mauling that was Bradford away, really. Bradford might have won 2-0, but it felt like Posh got away with it a little bit. We talk about whether we thought Bradford were really impressive or if it was Posh's deficiencies that really led to that performance. Spoiler alert, I think Bradford were very, very good. We did also talk about their star man and who we thought was their best player on the day. We dissect Posh's performance. We talk about George Nevitt a lot, obviously, and the Tom Lees injuries. And I once again mentioned the medical team, which, you know, didn't go down too well last time. So wait and see what I say about it this time. We also would love it if you are listening to this as a new listener, as a Bradford fan, or as a Posh fan that's just found this podcast. If you haven't subscribed already, the best way to support this channel is to give us a like and give us a subscribe. We would really appreciate it. We're chasing down 2,000 subs now, which would be a major achievement for us. So if you could subscribe to the video or even drop it a like or a comment, we would love that. We'd love to see all the engagement. I was joined for this episode by Lods and Ashley. So sit back, relax and enjoy. Ashley, talk me through that game and your feelings towards it.
Yeah, look, men against boys has been used many times this season when referencing Peterborough United and their opposition, and yesterday really did sum that up. And I think the last 180 minutes of football have just sort of summed up where we're at the moment, in that, what, we've had, did we have two shots yesterday? What was it, like four shots on Tuesday night against Mansfield? Yes, we scored six goals against Wigan, which was fantastic. Great day. But it's very easily and quickly forgotten when you put in a performance like yesterday. We were bullied, dominated from minute one. Bradford's game plan was great. They had those three players up at the top of the pitch that just wouldn't let us pass the ball out from the back, essentially. And any time that we did have the ball at the back, it always felt so rushed. And we just didn't look like we had anything that could counteract the problems that Bradford were causing it. And it's okay to blame injuries, but you look at the bench, our bench was crap yesterday. Like, even if you talk about Nevitt being on the bench, Nevitt's not a game changer, is he? So realistically, Nevitt's the only first teamer I would say that was on there. Frith has not done anything of any decency yet that we've seen. So I don't want to be disheartened, because I think that yesterday and probably midweek, even though we won, really summed up where we are as a football team. And we will survive League One this season, but not doing anything in January looks like it's going to come back and bite us on the arse big time.
Yeah, we're recording on a Sunday morning as opposed to a Saturday evening. So you'd think that after a good night's sleep, some of our reactions might be a little less hot-headed. But I'm still of the belief that that was the worst performance we've had this season, which, considering we spent a large portion of it bottom of the league, that is quite mind-blowing to say. However, what I would say to that is there is a lot of mitigating circumstances. I think that game on Tuesday night probably had its toll on the squad fitness-wise. Bradford were very good, it must be said, but that move that they had on the left-hand side, the triangles they were playing around JD, oh, I was so sick of seeing it. And I don't blame JD for this, because he essentially had three men to defend. It was really hard for him to sort of position himself, and he was one of the ones that I felt was probably the most tired after Tuesday night's game. But Kean Hayes was the other one. He just could not get back and help him out. And it probably just sums up how tired the squad is and how bare bones we are. I know there was the Tom Lees injury. I know that played a big part in the performance. But just in general, fitness, injuries, like Ashley said, that bench, it's probably one of the weakest benches we've ever had. And I 100% appreciate Luke Williams has tried to fix it at halftime by putting a back five in, and it didn't work, did it? I mean, we barely showed anything in the first half, attacking wise. Second half, I think we had one tame CJ shot on the edge of the area, and that was it. It just didn't look like we were going to score. And to be honest, the 2-0 flattered us. Bradford should have scored way more than two.
Yeah, Lods, I would go as far as to say I think that was one of the most mismatched games I've ever seen Posh play in League One. And we're obviously a posh centered podcast, so I want to focus mainly on our deficiencies. But I think before we say that, sometimes you do have to give credit to the opposition. And I thought Bradford were absolutely excellent from minute one. I thought they pressed us just into submission, really. I thought Graham Alexander got his tactics bang on. And I was really impressed. I mean, I've seen a lot of praise for Metcalf in the midfield. It was Max Power who really caught my eye. I thought he absolutely dominated and ran that game. And I was so impressed with him. So yeah, they're one of the best teams I've seen this season for sure. And I think you do have to qualify everything I'm about to say with that, because the opposition were excellent. However, for us to the shot differential in that match was obviously 29-4, which is a 25 shot differential. That's the second highest across the entirety of the Football League all season, which is crazy, really, when you think that. You know, how many positions were between us? Four at the start of the day. And Ash, I think you referenced men versus boys. It did look like that. And I think the worrying thing for me, I guess it's less worrying because I think we know where this season's heading and it's probably mid-table. But the concerning thing and the weakness that has, I think, been spotted in this squad is that they can be physically dominated. We can give tiredness some level of excuse. And I do think after Mansfield, the squad clearly were fatigued. But they weren't at Lincoln, they weren't at Plymouth, they probably weren't at Mansfield when they were also physically dominated. And although we won that night, you know, we kind of got away with one there, I think everyone would agree. So there is a trend that big, powerful, direct teams can really get at us. And that was on display no more so than yesterday, where the first half, Bradford just continuously switched the play and just exposed our fullbacks one-on-one or played up to Caden Jackson, and he was just on their bit and winning everything, and we just couldn't deal with that level of physicality. And then the second half, we kind of tried to change shape and we still couldn't combat them because they were outnumbering us in the middle. So, I sometimes you watch those games and you're like, what could the manager have done differently? And obviously, I'm sure Luke Williams will reflect on that and think, I didn't get everything right for his team to be dominated that much. But then I look at the options that we had available to us and I'm kind of like, I don't know if there was any way we could have won that football match. I really don't see a solution to what we saw on the pitch, which probably tells you where we're at the minute in terms of squad depth and availability, which is the biggest worry.
Yeah, John, you mentioned that ball over the top or the ball up to the strikers, and I think we should probably start on George Nevitt. Obviously, a late addition to the starting 11. And whilst I think that George Nevitt is a very good footballer, he's probably only a good footballer in 25% of games, because any time that there's a man up against him, any time that there's a man running past him, he just is simply not good enough. And he's so far off the pace, if you'll pardon the pun, that I just can't comprehend that he will ever be a League One quality footballer. I watched the highlights this morning before we started recording. And there's a moment where I think it's Ethan Wheatley. Keller passes the ball back to Nevitt. And Ethan Wheatley's like 10 yards off the ball. He somehow manages to make a challenge or nick the ball off of Nevitt when the ball's literally being passed back to Nevitt. And it's like he stood there in like slow motion and just doesn't move. Like, what are you waiting for? Clear the ball. We've nearly conceded a goal as a result of it. Nevitt actually wasn't at fault for any of the goals, but he was at fault for the consistent pressure because he just can't deal with it. He can't deal with physicality. He can't deal with pace. Yes, he's good on the ball, but the ball playing is like by the by when you can't defend and you can't challenge players up against you. And he's 20 yesterday, so I don't want to beat the guy down, but I just can't see how he would be somebody that we would ever need next season in a potential title challenging team.
It's quite funny, isn't it? Because at the start of the season, when we were playing five at the back with Nevitt in the middle, we were kind of saying Nevitt's arguably been our player of the season. But it feels like he's got a very niche role in the sense that he can only play the middle of a five and he needs two fast players around him that just cover for his pace and he just dictates the play. Because as soon as you put him in a four, Ash, like you say, there are times when George Nevitt takes to the pitch and because of his physical limitations, he simply doesn't look like a footballer.
The problem is that even when we have played that five at the back, you go back to Bolton away, he got bullied and bitched then as well. So it's even then, like, he's better in that system, But he's still not good enough because he still gets exposed when he's literally not got two people holding his hands. Like the minute they're more than 10 yards away from him, he's redundant.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think we've spoken about it before, haven't we? In the sense that that pace is such a big deficiency in his game. That how do you coach it? Like if he's a 20-year-old kid, that's passing is a little bit lax at times. You can kind of tighten that up on the training ground, but he's never going to be able to add to take 3 seconds off his 100-meter sprint time. It's becoming impossible for you to kind of see a viable role because there are games like that where he just looks just way off it. And I don't want to write him off because there are moments with Nevitt, which we've seen before, where he looks a really good, composed, ball-playing centre-back, and he's 20 years old. He's just turned 20. For him to be in a League One first team at centre-back, it's a hard, hard role for someone that age. There isn't many 19-year-old centre-backs that have got as much first-time experience in League One as George Nevitt. But you watch him yesterday, and like I say, you do question, how is that a viable option in a back four? I do think next season he needs to go out on loan. I don't really mind the level, maybe the conference, maybe the bottom end of League Two, and just learn the game and see if he gets on any better. But like you say, it's such a fundamental flaw, Ashley, that it is hard to kind of see him ever becoming a top-end League One centre-back, unfortunately.
The thing is, we always talk about George Nevitt's pace, but is Tom Lees that much quicker? Like, what is it that Tom Lees can do that George Nevitt... You put Tom Lees in that lineup yesterday and those balls coming over the top. What's Tom Lees doing differently to what George Nevitt is? I think the only thing I can think of is that he's lining up for the headers better. George Nevitt, I suppose, once he's running towards his goal and he's chasing those long balls, he's out of control, isn't he? He can't then turn back around and head the ball away, whereas Tom Lees is probably better at tracking back and winning the headers. I guess that's the only thing, because at the beginning of this season, we would have said that George Nevitt was better with the ball as well. So that's matched on pace and better at ball playing, yet we put George Nevitt in the side yesterday over Tom Lees and all of a sudden it's a disaster. So what is it that Tom Lees can do so much better than George Nevitt that would have stopped us from conceding as many chances as we did yesterday?
The simple answer is I'm not having it. The game would have gone exactly as it did. I don't think that Tom Lees coming out of the starting 11 has changed the way that game has gone because, as John mentioned, you've got to praise Bradford. It would have been exactly the same scenarios. They would have put the same pressure on. We would have still been uncomfortable at the back. Would have still been no chance to pass out and nothing would have changed.
We played a really high line yesterday, didn't we? Do you think that high line was going to be in place with Tom Lees in the team as well? Or do you think we've decided to play a little bit higher knowing that George Nevitt can play those passes? Because we were quite defensive against Mansfield, right? We had 40% possession. I would have expected us to line up a similar way against Bradford. And it definitely felt like we were going to try and control the game more than what we could, if that makes sense.
I've genuinely got no idea. And I'm going to backtrack on something that I've said, because I said that the game wouldn't have changed if Tom Lees was playing. We missed a leader yesterday in that back line, because there was times where we were setting up for defensive free kicks. And the only way that I can say it is that our back line was like this. So you got Dave that's playing about 3 yards deeper than everybody else. George Nevitt's trying to get people onto a line. JD's then trying to deal with two men at once. And no, you couldn't hear anybody. Like, I appreciate that Bradford's, they had 19K in or whatever. It was 18K plus the away end. And it was a good atmosphere, right? But you could never hear a posh player like shouting, screaming at someone, saying, get in this line. This is the line that we're having. Hold it. And yes, Tom Lees would have brought that. But I don't think that Tom Lees organising that back line would have had a positive impact on the result. And, you know, like, I just want to clarify. The full-time tweet went out and the first words were, Tom Lees dropped out of the team late. If I was a professional footballer that played for Peterborough United and somebody that is paid by the same payroll system that I am put out something like that, I'd be fucking pissed, because you're basically saying you're shit. The only reason we've lost is because of Tom Lees. Like, we have our opinion, right? So I'm not excluding us from this, but I don't get paid by Peterborough United for my opinion. I think that it's just bang out of order to basically say, well, the only reason we lost is because Tom Lees didn't play. Well, actually, I'm saying we would have still lost even if Tom Lees had played, because Bradford were just considerably better than us.
So I totally agree with you that Tom Lees in that team does not change the result. We lose that game. I do think it would have had a fundamental impact on the game of football, though, because Ash, you mentioned it just from set pieces, but we looked a disorganized mess in open play as well, particularly in the first half, where the long ball would just come over the top and the defensive line was just nowhere. There was a time when they had a 3-on-1 and it was just Carl Johnston backpedaling towards his own goal because the rest of the defense had seemingly ran off somewhere. And I do think if you have Tom Lees in there marshalling it, commanding it, those sort of things don't happen. And again, I don't think it changes the result at all, but having Lees' aerial ability means they can't knock that long ball. I just quickly had a look at the stats. Carl Johnston was under headers 10 times yesterday and he only won 3 headers. Dornelli was under the long ball 5 times yesterday, he won 1 header. Nevitt was under the long ball 5 times yesterday, he won 3 headers. Interestingly, Okagwe won 6 out of 6. And that's the difference. And I think if you have Lees in there winning everything as well as Okagwe, it means the long ball into your striker is a lot harder to pull off. You know, between Nevitt and Johnson on that side, that's 15 aerial challenges and they've only won 5 of them. So there's an easy way out. You just crossfield flank towards the right flank there, right flank. And we couldn't deal with it. And we saw that so much in the first half that we're having to bring on Luka Mendonca to play a 5 at the back. And look, I feel sorry for Mendonca. You're not wanting to bring an 18-year-old centre-half who's not... I really like him. And on the ball, I actually thought he looked really good again yesterday at times. But he'd get pinned for the goal because he's up against physical men. He's still really a kid, isn't he? And he doesn't... He's not particularly built for an 18-year-old. He's never going to be like aerially dominant yet. He needs to develop physically. There's nothing, no slight on him in that. It's just not an ideal scenario to bring in on a kid. And he's played against Bradford and Stevenage now, which is two of the most physical and robust challenges you can ever have, because we just don't have the options at centre-back. So like, going back to your point, Ash, again, should we not have brought in a centre-back in January now? Does that not look like a bit of an error given the injury list? We knew we were playing we were taking a bit of a gamble on Lee staying fit for the whole season. I think we've all said on here, it's remarkable that he hasn't got injured because of the amount of football that he's played and given his lack of pre-season and age. And then obviously it happens. And now you're kind of going, well, what options have you got at the back? And it's going to be a flaw for the rest of the season, probably.
Yeah, it's a concern because we've got one fit centre-back in Okagwe and then you're basically partnering with one of Nevitt or Mendonca, and that's, you saw how Bradford targeted Nevitt yesterday. They're just going to do that with whichever one we play alongside Okagwe for the foreseeable future, aren't we? If we're assuming that Tom Lees is out for the rest of the season. And actually, just quickly before we finish on George Nevitt, there was one thing I was going to praise him for, which was when Okagwe and Alex Bass had that miscommunication, ran into each other, and I think it was Caden Jackson, didn't he, had a free shot at goal. George Nevitt was the one that covered back to stop the shot from going in. But now I've watched the highlights, that shot went at about 3 miles per hour. George Nevitt's tried to clear it on his weaker foot and just rolled it straight back into a dangerous area. Instead of, he literally had the time to just turn and do whatever he wanted with it. So the one thing that I was going to praise George Nevitt for is actually, now I've watched the highlights, one of the worst mistakes he made on the day. But yeah, centre-backs, I agree with you, John. We should have signed someone. We've got Claxton that we could recall back from his development loan. I think for me, I would want to rotate the three of them. I really worry, Mendonca we know has such a high potential. I really worry that if we play him every game between now and the end of the season, he just gets burned out. And I think we have done that with Nevitt to an extent. We played him a lot last season. And sometimes with young players, you just want to play them a little bit, let them perform well and bring them back out again. And if we've not got the opportunity to do that with Mendonca, I worry that he's going to make mistakes and it's going to damage his confidence and we're not going to get the player that we thought we would next season.
Yeah, well, we asked the question of how does Sam Hughes get back into the team? Well, here we have it, an injury to Tom Lees. And how long is it before Sam Hughes comes back? Well, fingers crossed that it's not too long, because we need somebody at the back there to help this young defence, and he can't come back soon enough, can he?
He can't, Ash. He really can't. But look, I don't want to talk about the physio department again. So, Dara, don't get your private investigators on me, but are we not due a chat? Is this not at the point where we can say the medical team, what's going on? Have we not had enough injuries? You know, the crack mirror has been fixed and these injuries still seem to be happening. So maybe it's not luck. I don't know. it's funny that Darren will call out Tottenham Hotspur on his podcast for having half a team out injured and say they need to do a review into their sports science department. And yet here we are, second season running, really, where injuries really seem to be derailing our season. I'm sure they are doing this investigation. I should qualify. This isn't me calling for anyone to be sacked. It's not an attack on any one member of staff. But I think as fans, we have a right to be concerned about the amount of injuries that are racking up. And we're told, you know, Jacob Mendy, oh, it's a short-term thing. He'll be back. Where is he? Even him we could do with at this point. Ben Woods, I thought that at the time wasn't meant to be that long-term. We haven't seen him for months now. These are Matty Garber, when's he back? You know, these are big players for us. Tom Lees looks like he's out for the season now. Like, for this many players to be out long-term, over the course of the season, it feels like we do need to do some work into why this is happening. And some of the circumstances are not great. Like Akagwe's ankle, you can't help, right? There's nothing you can do about that. But when I see Tom Lees getting injured in a warm-up and Jacob Mendy being out for weeks and then coming back and getting injured the next game, are these not injuries that you can kind of think, what's happening here? Is that not a fair question? Like, maybe I'm completely wrong and we have the best in class and everything's fine and we are just getting unlucky. That I can't see behind the curtains, but on the face of it, the amount of injuries we have is definitely a concern, and that I do believe there needs to be some investigation somewhere into what is going wrong, because surely something is going wrong.
Yeah, look, footballers use their lower halves of their body, right? That's their working part of their body when they're playing football. But we had Alex Bass, foot injury, Garbutt, foot injury, Sam Hughes, Achilles, Tom Lees, calf, Ben Woods, calf. Then we've had Tom O'Connor, hamstring. Has there been another hamstring in there somewhere? Can't remember. This season, Jacob Mendy, groin. It's all starting to add up, and I'm sure that Darius said it about the training pitch. Like, are they being overworked in training now? Is it just too much? Because, John, you mentioned that Tom Lees was in the warm-up. I don't think he's even managed to get to the warm-up. I think he's basically put his boot on grass and then he's felt something go. Like, how ridiculous is that? Like, surely there must have been a precursor there somewhere that he's gone, oh, something doesn't feel right here. But the minute that he runs out and tries to hop onto the pitch, bang, there goes his calf.
Do you think that Williams's pre-match warm-up routine might be a slight factor into the Tom Lees injury? We've obviously seen football teams for decades have always done the same thing, haven't they? They do like a slight warm-up and a gradual, you know, ball exercise before a game. Williams has obviously tried to change that and gone for like an intense, like 15-minute hard physical warm up to get the players pumped up for it. Is there an argument that going from sitting on a coach for hours and then all of a sudden doing an aggressive warm up routine that might shock someone like Tom Lees's muscles to the point where they pop like that?
No chance. The players would have stayed over the night. They would have been within a 20-minute radius of the ground. So they've made a short trip. Yes, they've done a long journey yesterday, but they've still had that stretch, massage, probably in the pool somewhere, a light training session yesterday. I just don't see how we can blame. If the injuries were happening at the start of a game, you could say, yes, it's the warm-up. They're going too heavy too soon. But I would say that, I like to watch the warm-ups, right? Yes, they are doing a shorter warm-up, but the initial activation is still exactly the same as it was before. They're not doing the passing drills for as long of a time. They're not doing the shooting drills for as long as a time. They're breaking up into their respective departments. Like now you only see four players go and do the the shooting drill, whereas before it would have been seven or eight players. You have the defense doing their bit. You have the midfielders doing passing drills and heading drills. So I don't think that we can blame the warm-up because, well, Tom Lees hasn't even got to the warm-up.
Yeah, I mean, none of us are sports scientists, so it's very hard to put your finger on what it is that's going wrong. Or like I say, it's very hard to say it's this individual thing or that individual thing. But Lods, I think to your point, these injuries have been happening for a long time now. At least it feels like it. We had that one season in 23-24 where we seemed to get through it completely unscathed. And then since then, it's kind of been really difficult to keep players off the treatment table. So that's with Ferguson, with Williams. So to then sort of suggest maybe it's Williams' warm-up, I'm not sure I buy it. I mean, we've had, what, one injury in the warm-up, 35-year-old bloke. It could happen. So I think to just suggest that it's because Williams does a quicker warm-up probably overlooks the reason this is happening. I think there's something more fundamental and underlying that's probably more likely the cause.
Yeah, that's fair. I think what you said, though, it's not luck, is it? Dara blaming the cracked mirror and replacing his mirror, that's just an excuse, isn't it? They do need to do a deeper dive into it, because we've had two injuries since then. Matt Garbutt wasn't injured since he's replaced the mirror, and now Tom Lees, and like you say, it's two big players. Should we go a little bit more positive? Let's talk about Alex Bass, because out of all the players in yesterday's game, I think he was the one that can come out with the most credit. Again, absolutely fantastic, made some excellent saves. Yeah, there's a couple of iffy moments, normally is, to be fair to him. But again, some great saves, some great catches, and easily could have been more than two had we not had Alex Bass in goal.
Yeah, no, I do agree. It's just a shame that he does have that one mark on his record from yesterday. And I think that Alex Bass is 50% of the reason that we conceded the first goal yesterday. He's obviously under pressure from Caden Jackson, but it would have been nicer to have seen a stronger punch or just a catch. Like we said before we started recording, didn't we, Lods, is that if he catches the ball and Caden Jackson knocks him into the back of the net, it's a foul. The goal doesn't get given. So what's the worst that can happen there? The punch was poor. It's landed straight to a Bradford player. And yes, look, the other probably 49 times out of 50 that he does that, it doesn't go straight into the Bradford player. And yeah, just briefly before that, he was on the floor scrambling around, wasn't he? And he's handballed it. The ref's not seen it. Linesman's not seen it. Thank fuck they've not seen it. Because I'm sure that Bastian Smith's a fantastic goalkeeper. And I'm sure that I'm confident that he's going to be good, because he's definitely got a considerably taller when we have concerns over his height. But I wouldn't want to be bringing Bastian Smith onto a game like that yesterday. So he's a lucky man not to have been sent off. But it was a ropey start. But you can maybe put that down to the fact that they do their formations, they do their lineups, and he's expecting Tom Lees and Dave, and then all of a sudden it's changed and he knows that he's got to play slightly differently, because the playing out from the back just didn't happen yesterday. So everything was having to go long. But yes, Alex Bass stopped the score being probably 7 or 8 nil yesterday because of all the great saves that he made. But we can't ignore the fact that he should have done better for Bradford's first goal, in my opinion.
Yeah, and it definitely was a red card. I think the people at the back of the stand weren't sure if he handballed it or not, so I can sort of see why the ref and the linesman might have missed it. But where me and you were sat, actually, it was very clear that he definitely made contact with his hand there. Just one more bit of positivity around Alex Bass before we move on. After he won Man of the Match on Tuesday night, I tweeted about the potential of keeping Alex Bass for a long time, maybe after 3 years, signing a new deal and staying for another 3 years, which is something that we don't really see very often at Posh. I found an interview he did when he signed for Notts County, which was only a year before we signed him. And he said, "I'm at the age now where I'm not really bothered where I am. I just want to go out and play and find a settled home. And hopefully that brings the best out of you." And since then, he's got married and had a kid. So I honestly think that if he can stay at this high level, he might choose to just stay with us. He obviously is just happy being a number one. I presume we're paying him well. It'd be nice if we can get promoted and get to the championship with him. But I think for as long as he's playing well, I think he could stay with us for a long time. Maybe all the way until he's retired.
Yeah, as it stands, that would be quite nice. I mean, the save in the second half that he pulled off, I thought could have been, on another day, it could have been save of the season. What I would say is, when a goalkeeper's worked that much, it's quite easy for them to look good. Like when you get battered, it goes right through to like under 10 football, where when the team loses 11-0, often the goalkeeper gets man of the match just because they're the ones doing all the work and the players on the pitch haven't done anything. So I think it was a game where it was relatively easy for him to look good. But on the same token, there were some things that he did that were really high level, including that save in the second half. Some players that potentially didn't do things of a high level, were the two fullbacks. I thought both of them had an absolutely torrid time. I think Ash might have mentioned Dornelli not clearing the initial cross for the first goal is probably not as glaring an error as what Bass made, certainly not as eye-catching, but it's not great. You've got to go and be a bit more aggressive there, JD, and just put out for a corner and deal with it from there. And all game, I thought he struggled. Like I say, he had a 20% win rate on his headers, which for a guy of his height at right back isn't particularly great. And Kyle Johnston as well, I thought, really struggled. Again, I think Kyle Johnston has been great since he's come in and played left back. I really do think he's been a credit to the cause. But I think that for me, there is no way that next season, if you are genuine about winning promotion, I don't think he's a promotion winning left back. I think he's a covering fullback potentially that covers both sides very well. But I don't see him as like a elite level left back. And I think he really struggled yesterday. And we kind of saw he is starting to get targeted a bit. I think Mansfield targeted his side as well. And I'm noticing that teams are attacking a lot down his side. And I don't think that's because of his defensive capabilities, because if the ball's on the floor, he's pretty good. But I do think it's probably because of his aerial and lack of height and maybe lack of physicality, which again is something that you're never going to be able to change. He can't grow. He's 23, so he's never going to get taller than what he is now. And he is struggling a little bit at the minute. So Harley Mills coming back would definitely be a positive, I think, at this point.
Yeah, John, I think the reason that CJ gets targeted so much as well is that he just struggles to get forward. That's not his game, is it? So naturally, if you've got a left back that's happy to get forwards and push on, you're going to push the right winger and the right backs further back. But because it's very much Kyrie Lisby doing the attacking and CJ just sort of there supporting behind him, you're always got that constant pressure. Like the right winger never feels the urge, oh, my right back needs some support today, or my right wing back needs some support. So they're higher up the pitch and they've got a better starting position, don't they? And yeah, you mentioned James Dornelli for the first goal. I don't want to, this isn't an I told you so, but it's a ball, isn't it, to the back post that he struggled with. It's bounced twice and then the Bradford players managed to spoon it up in the air. You mentioned it, just put it out for a corner. And I'm sure that I mentioned it on Countdown to Kickoff that JD looked tired yesterday. Lods, you said that, didn't you, earlier on? And PK being ill is really annoying because, again, I'm sure that I said that it would have been the perfect game for PK to have come in and switched out for JD. And I think that we saw that is that everything felt a little bit harder. And that's not just down to JD. He was 2-on-1 for the whole of the game. And, John, you obviously put out at halftime that Hayes was our best player. I actually thought that Hayes massively stitched up his teammate yesterday. Through one reason or another, he was just nowhere near supporting defensively yesterday. And any time that the ball got past Hayes, he just looked like he couldn't get back. So it wasn't a great performance from JD. He could have done better with the first goal, similar to Bass. But when you are 2-on-1, you're just massively exposed. And I don't ever expect a football player to win a 2-on-1. And if they do, then credit to them. But yeah, just dominated from minute one, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think with JD and those back post crosses, I sort of re-watched that first goal and sort of pinpointed exactly where he made the wrong decision. I think for me, even though you can tell the ball's going to bounce, JD always worries about the player behind him. I get why he does it, because his strength is probably on the floor defending, a bit like how CJ does, and not winning headers. But in that circumstance, you just need to get rid of the ball out of the danger area, because he's literally turned away from where the ball's coming from to go and catch up to the player that the ball's about to land at. And he could have got to the ball first, like put out for a corner, just get anything on it, get it away. Like that's something that he really needs to learn. His decision-making has been not great since he's been in the first team, but that's something that he needs to learn how to deal with those aerial balls, despite having that physical deficiency. And yeah, I fully agree with you on Kean Hayes, actually. I know I mentioned it earlier, but that left-hand triangle they played with Torre, Wright and Poynton, just men against boys, like you said, that was just like elite level. It was like we were playing a Premier League team. Some of the passes, they were knocking it around and they were just getting past us so easily and whipping those balls in. And I think with Kean Hayes, you would naturally expect him to then track back. I mean, it was a left-sided centre-back that was pushing up. You'd expect Hayes to be able to track back and stop that from happening. But he just looked like he was so knackered that he couldn't do it. And then what would happen is you sort of half-heartedly get back, but then the ball end up with Bass. Bass will play a quick kick to Leonard, and all of a sudden Leonard's got no one to flick the ball onto because Hayes can't get back up pitch quick enough. So he was sort of caught in those, do I come back and help defend, or do I just stay up and hopefully I can do some attacking? And where John said that Hayes was our best player in the first half, I think that's because the times where he got caught out on the halfway line and got the ball, he did make a few good driving runs, but that probably wasn't the game plan that suited us. We could have done with him running off of a Leonard flick on rather than him trying to drive forward at 2-3 players and play a through ball to Harry Leonard, which is simply just not going to happen, is it?
Yeah, I think the reason, I mean, Hayes dropped off a little bit in the second half, but I think we're being a little bit harsh if we're judging his performance purely on defensive metrics. I think if you look at the only one that offered us any threat over the, certainly over the first half, was Kieran Hayes. I think if you look at his impact compared to Lisby, Lisby had a negligible impact on the game for me. I didn't think he did anything going forward, whereas I can remember two or three of Hayes' driving runs. So that's why I think he looked good.
I think my biggest frustration with both the wingers, I won't just single out Hayes here, but Bradford are playing a back three, and like I've just said, their wing-backs were pushing up high, and sometimes their wide centre-backs were pushing up as well. There was so much space on their wings that we could have had them at, and for some reason, the wingers were driving inwards every time rather than just going out wide and stretching their back line. I always say this, when you're playing a team that are playing a back three, trying to attack narrow is just such a silly thing to do because it's so easy to defend against, and I think that's why Bradford just made all of our attacking threats just look so incompetent.
But again, I don't necessarily think that can be pinned on the players because Hayes isn't a darting winger down the touchline. He plays as an inverted winger. He's always played like that. That's, if you're going to start Kieran Hayes, what's his biggest strength? His dribbling ability. He's one of the best dribblers in League One by all the metrics. So I don't think a knock and run winger is going to be Hayes' game. It's just not what he does. You're almost better off, I don't know if you are better off putting Declan Frith in the team, but it's not going to be the way that he plays football. If you're playing Kieran Hayes, you know he's going to check inside. You know he likes it in tight spaces. And I think, like I say, he carried our biggest attacking threat. He got his fullback booked. I thought both the fullback and centre-half could have been booked. They were both quite aggressive on him in the first half. And the ref certainly wasn't at fault for why we lost, but I did think he was terrible. I've seen him twice now that I remember, and both games I think he's been an absolutely appalling referee, and I didn't think he was, but that is by the by. Second half, I did think Hayes dropped off, but I do also think that that was partly due to the formation shift and the fact that, well, I had a bit of a chat with Charlie where I kind of said, I think we need to go to a five at the back because just to stop the crossfield passes. You can obviously, if you go five at the back, you can get your centre-backs out to the winger quicker. But it did, I feel, detract from our attacking play, which is kind of what Charlie was saying. We're 1-0 down and it's killed our attacking threat. And although we only had a very limited attacking threat in the first half, and it was, I stress, very limited, I think it was Hayes that was the one that was the most likely to catch them in transition. We just didn't get him the ball enough.
Yeah, I don't disagree. And the only sort of comparison that I can make with Kieran Hayes yesterday is it felt like a very Sariki Dembele type performance, not to the standard, but more so that whenever Hayes was being tackled, he just kept pushing through, didn't he? It was kind of like the thing on, you know, the thing on Gladiators where they're there with like the scrum bags and they're just trying to push you, like the little like curve thing. You're just trying to, you've got to get through them. It felt like that. And he would just keep going. So the endeavour was there. But John, you mentioned that they're not touchline wingers. If we could see it, we are not master tacticians. We will say this time and time again. We only share our opinions. Would the solution not to have been to have switched Lisby and Hayes and have had them so that they can run down the wing into that space that was being left behind? And we've seen, I think this is my frustration, is that we've seen Luke Williams do that before. We've seen very early on in games, 15, 20 minutes in, he's gone, right, we need to switch the wingers because this is where the space is. I would have liked to have seen that yesterday because, yes, Lisby was very quiet and, yes, Hayes would put in a battling performance as a right winger. But as Loz mentioned, the wingbacks were so far forwards that we could have literally just gone 3-for-3. We know that Jimmy J. Morgan's always going to get up there and try and support as best as possible, but we just didn't give the players that opportunity.
Yeah, and it was Jimmy J. Morgan that was the full guy, wasn't it, from the first half? I know Williams said that he got booked and that was the main reason for subbing him off. I don't buy into that. I think he was probably the worst player in the first half, certainly in possession. I think every time he got the ball, he panicked. To be fair to him, how congested the pitch was in the middle, it was difficult for him to play his normal game. But even some of the simple passes he was trying to play back, it just wasn't working. There were so many like fizzed passes, not just from him, from everyone, but those fizzed passes that were sort of like shin height. Like, how can you control a pass like that? Like, so difficult. And they were the ones that were on target. There were so many that were just completely misplaced. And I think the one that summed it up from Jimmy J. Morgan was that 50-yard pass that he played back to Bass that just completely put him under so much pressure, just unnecessary. And I think Bass had managed to scuff it to the halfway line back to a Bradford player, like, did the best he could. I think that was the reason why Jimmy J got brought off. I don't think it was a game that suited him. I think a game like that, you're probably missing Matt Garbutt a little bit. Jimmy J needs the space to run into a little bit more. We know that he's probably a bit faster with the transitions, but when the pitch is congested like that and Bradford are as tight as they are, it is really hard to play those passes. And you're sort of relying on hold-up play, and we didn't really have that, especially in that first half.
I actually thought it was a really weird performance from Jimmy J because he was so good. Obviously took his goals so well against Mansfield, and I actually thought he was very good that night. And then he got snapped by Max Power after about 5 minutes with quite a high tackle. It was one of them where it was in that grey area of, yeah, Power got the ball, but sometimes you see refs give them because the studs are in the air and the ref just kind of let it play on. And I was like, okay, fine. And he kind of limped away from that tackle and then he looked panicked, like visibly panicked in possession after that. And I don't want to say it was because of that tackle, because I actually think Morgan, we've commented on this before, he gets a lot of rough treatment and often he stands up to it. He usually stands up to it fine, but he did seem really like rushed in possession. And then off the ball as well, he seemed tired to me. He just didn't seem to have that usual vigor and energy that he has in his pressing game. And he did need to come off at halftime. Like, he was, I agree with you, Lodge, he was the worst player on the pitch and it was a bad performance from everyone. So I do wonder if potentially he was carrying something after that tackle, because it did seem to take some of the life out of him. There was, for the first 5 minutes, I actually thought we played some relatively decent stuff. I know this is probably a bit by the by now, but there were a couple of moments where we put together few passing moves and Morgan was involved in that. And then, yeah, it was like all of a sudden after that tackle and halfway line, he just completely shrunk in the game. And I think he's owed the benefit of the doubt, because I consistently say that I think he's an excellent footballer. I think he's a very clever footballer. I think he's technically very good, but we didn't really see any of that quality yesterday. And actually, it was probably his worst performance in our shirt so far, I would say. I can't think of any others where I've noticed Morgan particularly being the worst player on the team. And I thought for the first 45 minutes, he was that yesterday.
Yeah, I don't know whether it was Morgan, but we commented on one, didn't we, Lodge, during the game where somebody, it probably was Morgan, and it was probably after this tackle that you mentioned, Lodge, is that he should have gone for the ball, but he kind of just pulled out of it because he saw somebody coming towards him. And it probably was Max Power as well. And I know that you guys mentioned him at the start of the game. It was just an absolute class in a midfield role, wasn't it? He went in with Leonard. They went head to head. And then literally 2 minutes later, Harry Leonard gets booked, doesn't he? So, like, Max Power controlled that game. He dominated it. I know that he didn't get that man of the match. But I don't think that I've ever watched a Max Power performance and thought, do you know what? I'd really fucking love a defender or a midfielder like him, because he's just everything that you want from your nucleus. He holds a team together, he orchestrates everything, and he controls referees as well. He does it so well. And like, just you control the referee, you control the game, don't you?
Yeah, it was interesting because, look, I love Archie Collins, and this isn't any way disparaging to Archie Collins, because I think he's a brilliant, brilliant footballer. But when you watch someone marshal the midfield like that, in the way that Power has that physicality and aggression, there are times where you kind of think, oh, it would be nice to have a player like that. We've not really seen one since maybe the Bostwick era. Ollie Norburn, could you say him? He was that nasty kick it man in midfield. But just just that type of midfielder. There are games where they look cloggers, and I don't know if this is a fair comment on Max Power. There are sometimes games where players like that can look fundamentally flawed technically, but Power yesterday seemed to have a great range of passing to go with that aggression as well. And while Collins is he's an amazing player, so this isn't a dig at Archie Collins, but he doesn't have that switch in him like that to run games quite in that manner. And then you know, sometimes you see them with the atmosphere up and the big grounds, and you're like, oh, I would love to see a midfielder like that at Posh. Just someone that would just be a bit nasty and put a bite in, because our midfield, it's very pretty at times and they can play great triangles, but sometimes you do just miss that guy that's just going to stick somebody in the stands and win 50-50s and give it to the crowd. And like you say, Ash, give it to Leonard and get him booked the next. He just ran it. He was so good.
Yeah, it's just an enforcer, isn't it? And my memory may be wrong here, but it doesn't remind me of that. But let's say, like, we've always had them when we've been good, and maybe that's where we need to replace Archie Collins, not with Archie Collins, is replace it with that enforcer midfielder. Like, I think Dean Keats, he was good. Like, he wasn't big and he wasn't powerful, but then you then move on to Grant McCann, don't you? And then you move on to Boswick. Anthony Grant wasn't a fantastic footballer, but he was willing to go into a tackle, wasn't he? I also didn't think that this player was particularly good for us, but Fuchs as well, like, was involved in that sort of thing, was always there. Norburn, you move on to it. Recently, we've had a luxury of pretty footballers and pretty midfielders, and we've missed out on that general. It's a midfield general, isn't it? Any good team has a midfield general. So fingers crossed that if that's something that Luke Williams wants, that's something that we can go and find, because it's just somebody that you're going to win games 1-0 and you're going to praise that midfielder for just running absolutely everything and spraying the ball left, spraying the ball right and breaking quickly. So I don't think Max Power wasn't the reason that Bradford won the game, because they dominated us 11-11. But when you look at all of the nitty gritties, if he's absolutely snapped Jimmy J. Morgan early on and Jimmy J. Morgan's afraid to then go into any future tackle with him because he doesn't want to get injured, well, that's had a massive impact on the game, hasn't it?
I think it's really interesting. In our preview show, Charlie obviously said that there isn't a single Bradford player that gets into our 11. And I think when you look at it on paper, he is probably right. Individually, we probably do have better players. However, Bradford is the perfect example of very average players put together in a team, doing a role very, very well and playing at a high level. And I think we always struggle against teams like that. You know, we go in and we look at players and we think, nah, we should beat these. But then when you actually watch them play, they play really well, really well coached, really well organised, and then doing those moves that are really hard to defend against.
I think you're saying that with a little bit of blue-tinted specs on, Lods. I think Charlie was as well, to be honest. I think there's plenty of Bradford players that would walk into this team right now. Max Power, one of them. I think if you ask Bradford fans who they'd rather have, Max Power or Brandon Keller, I think they're probably saying Max Power. I think if you ask about Metcalf, you're probably taking him. I think if you ask about Ibu Toure or Carl Johnston or Harley Mills, you're definitely taking their left back. Like, there's no doubt about it in my mind. Tyreek Wright, for instance, I know he got a bit of stick from Bradford fans, but he was playing left wing back. You would have him over Carl Johnston at the minute, in my opinion, because of the way he got forward yesterday. I thought he was absolutely brilliant. I really don't subscribe to this theory. We obviously see these players every week, but I think if you're a neutral fan, you're not necessarily going to think, oh, I'll take Dave Akagwe over one of their centre-backs, because you're watching their centre-backs every week. So, and I'm not saying that this is wrong, because I think Akagwe is a good player, but we see these players, so we see what their ceiling is. But I think if you watch Bradford every week, Akagwe doesn't have that reputation that is going to... There's no Bradford fan that would be like, yeah, I'd have him in our defence. You're going to have Curtis Tilt, who's probably a stalwart of the Football League over the last 15 years. You know, these are good players that they've got, and I think it does them a bit of a disservice to just say, well, on paper Posh have got 11 better players than them, because on the pitch it didn't play like that. And actually, I think someone like Bobby Poynton, for instance, would be a brilliant signing for Posh. He would be amazing, but we're not going to be able to get him now because they've put together, I think, a better squad than us. So yeah, that's my take on it. I think there's plenty of Bradford players that would get into this starting 11.
Yeah, John, you briefly mentioned Brandon Keller there, and I don't know whether it was returning back to where he had played last season or playing against that team, because I didn't think that he had the impact that he would have wanted on the game yesterday. And if I jog my memory all the way back to August, I think it was probably quite poor against Bradford in August when we played them at home. And I don't know whether that's just a case of trying too hard, trying too much, but it certainly felt like he wasn't all quite there. And yes, he got a clap from the Bradford fans when he went off, and that was quite a nice moment that they respect what he contributed to their promotion. But it wasn't a midfield performance that I'm sure that Brandon Keller will be proud of. And the comparisons are there, like, they're easy to make, but we just got physically dominated, didn't we? And although Keller has got that engine, he's got that ability to drive and run, he just wasn't allowed to do that. And at no point did you ever feel like he was going to take the game by the scruff of the neck and make it his own, which it left us short across the pitch, I would say.
Yeah, I think that's the issue with our midfield at the moment, isn't it? We've got Archie Collins that we know can play well. And to be fair to Archie, I think he actually did have a good game against Bradford, not on the same level as the two midfielders that you spoke about there for Bradford. But he definitely was one of our better players on the pitch. But his midfield partner, we're struggling to find someone that can sort of match the same levels as Archie. And knowing that Archie's not going to be here next season, it is really difficult. It would have been nice to see Ben Woods yesterday. I think Ben Woods might have done a better job than Brandon Keller. And I think it was the right call to play Brandon over Donne after Donne's performance on Tuesday. You sort of know what you're going to get with Donne, and I don't think yesterday's game would have suited him. But for what it's worth, when he came off the bench, for the small amount of game that he did play, I thought he actually looked quite good in possession. He seemed to be a lot calmer than what the other players were, but when you're already 2-0 down, I suppose it's easier, isn't it? You're not getting pressed as much. You're not playing against a fully fit Bradford side at that point.
Yeah, it's difficult, isn't it? Because I looked at our bench and they didn't look massively strong, and we obviously were enforced into make that change. Adoroju coming on for Leonard. It looked like Leonard went down with a knock or something like that. But I think it was always going to be, and this is maybe where we go back to the wingers, and this is not just under Luke Williams, this is under Fergie as well, but whenever we are playing the formation that we play, which is a one striker, and we're playing against the back three, Harry Leonard just seems to struggle, which is fine. Like, I get that. Like, you're 3v1 for the majority of the game, aren't you? And he tries his hardest, but you could see him slowly coming further and back and further back to try and get involved in the game more. But it just didn't happen. And then you replace with Adoroju, who is meant to be this big physical striker. And I think that even he struggled yesterday. I would have personally liked to have seen them both on the pitch at the same time, especially when to that back five. I know that Williams probably wanted to keep Lisby and Hayes on the pitch so that we could still have that run. But I think for me, the change that I would have quite liked is probably for us to have actually been a 5-3-2 and just accepted that we were a flat five, and then let the midfielders maybe run on a little bit more with the two strikers getting up there and being friends with each other and supporting each other. I don't want to be harsh on Pemmy, but I feel like he's probably missed another opportunity. I know that it's a great block that ended up going out for a corner, but when you're that close to the goal as a striker, you probably expect the ball to go into the back of the net. And we've seen it at Wickham where he should have scored. I'm not so sure on the one yesterday, because it was a lot quicker, it was a lot closer to the defender. But yeah, I mean, it would have been great if he could have put the ball away and would have probably changed the game.
I actually didn't think Pemmy did too badly. I think you were a little bit harsh. I would give credit to the defender there more than I would on the miss. Yes, it would have been nice to see it go in, but when you look at the replay, I'm not really sure where else he could have put it. So credit to the defender. On Pemmy, I actually think he's an upgrade on Lindgren. I'm going to say that publicly for the first time. I think actually he came on and he actually held the ball up quite well. I think he won us a free kick on halfway line. And yes, he is raw at times. And you kind of get that given that he was at Eastbourne a month ago. But I do think that there are things that I see with him that I quite like. And I like having that option to go to a bit of a more physical target man. I completely agree with you that it would have been quite nice to see him up there with Leonard. And I don't know if we've seen them in combination together yet. But it is a combination that I think would work for us, because they're both quite good in the air. So,
the only time that, John, the only time that we did see them in combination was when Pemi nearly scored that absolute pisser with his left foot, didn't he? I think he won it. Leonard knocked it onto him and then back to him. So they clearly got a relatively good like relationship. Like things like that don't just happen. So the chances are there. We just need to see it, don't we?
Yeah. So I'm quite optimistic about Pemi, and he's someone that actually I think has. Look, I think in an ideal world, Williams would have signed a striker. I know Dara kind of says that he wouldn't, but I find that slightly hard to believe that the manager didn't want another striker. But if that is the case, I do think Pemi does have an option and a role in the squad. When I look at the bench now, when he comes on, I don't feel like it is a downgrade on Leonard. Of course it is. But I do feel like there are times where I'm sort of thinking, I wouldn't mind seeing Pemi here. And I've thought that both against Mansfield and Bradford because of the physicality. He gives us something a little bit different. And I like having options on the bench which are a little bit different. A lot of times I feel like Posh just bring on the same player for the same player. We'll take one tricky winger off and go, here's another tricky winger. And it doesn't really give you a look at anything different. Whereas when Pemi comes on, it does give us a very different type of player physically. And it does make us more robust, both in our own box and going forward. So I do think there's a role to play. And actually, I wouldn't mind him sticking around for next season as well. I've seen enough in him already that I'm relatively encouraged about Pemi. And I do think that he is a viable option even in League One. So well done, Pemi.
I think the only player left to talk about is Declan Frith. And the comparisons aren't great, are they, at the moment, unfortunately. We replaced Ephraim Mason-Clark with Abraham Oddo. And we've replaced Kwame Poku. These are Dara's words, not mine, with Declan Frith. And unfortunately, neither look to be cutting the grade, do they, or cutting the mustard. Declan Frith, he just looks like he just gets shoved off the ball, doesn't he? Constantly. Like he feels like he has a very low centre of gravity, but that's to a detriment of his ability to carry the ball forwards. And I said that I thought that actually the game would have probably been quite good for him. But again, it probably is another one where it would have been nice to, I know that he's a right winger, it would have been nice to have seen him come on the left wing where he's not having to run inside where it's very congested consistently. So I personally don't think that it was Frith's worst performance. I think that we were already down in the dumps and we knew that we were beaten anyway when he came on. So what impact can a player have when we're being dominated for 90 minutes? But yeah, I mean, just maybe it would be nice to see, knowing how knackered Hayes is, maybe it would be nice. Big picture, Barnsley, isn't it? So maybe it would be nice to see Frith from the start and see, hopefully, that he's got something.
Yeah, I'm with you, Ash. It wasn't his worst performance ever, but I'm struggling to see what he is or what he does, or he's just not really having any sort of impact. He comes onto games, but he doesn't make any impact on them. It's almost like, at the minute, I'm loathe to make the comparison, and I wouldn't go as far as Charlie to say that he's worse than Oddo, but he does feel in that category of winger where you feel like, what is his major strength? Like I kind of said about Kean Hayes being that dribbler or someone like that. He's not like lightning quick. He doesn't feel like a great dribbler. I'm just not sure what he brings when he comes on at the minute. And there was a stage of the season where I was quite excited about Frith. I remember that assist at Bradford in the first game where we kind of thought, oh, this guy might have a bit, but it feels a little bit like he's regressed. And while Lisby has really pushed on in his first season with us, it feels a bit like Frith has stayed static and not really kicked on. So again, while I don't want to write him off entirely, I think it's fair to say that his first season at Posh hasn't gone to plan, and he probably is one of those players that needs to step up. I think while we're talking on Frith, I should mention it. The corner. I don't know that he's taken many for us before, but that was one stage where we had a little bit of momentum and it felt like, go on then, get a corner and get the big lads are up. The big lads that we have, I mean, they're probably medium-sized lads compared to the Bradford team. But he rolled it along the floor at about 10 miles per hour straight to a Bradford defender. And I felt like that is kind of a good visual description of the way Frith's last 3 months at Posh have been, I think. So, yeah, that... While I'm not... while I'm not writing him off, as I say, I do think there's a stage where he's going to have to do something before the end of the season. Otherwise, when we do that retained list episode, I think there might be a few putting him on the transfer list.
Yeah, I don't know what the answer is with Declan Frith, because Fergie spoke very highly about him. He was injured when Williams came in, but Williams was raving about him, saying he can't wait to get him back on the pitch. And we just haven't seen it, have we? Like, maybe a run of starts, we might see a different player, but it's a big risk to take when we're not seeing him perform off the bench. We've had a lot of money for him, and when you're being dubbed as the Poku replacement, and I'm sure someone at some point said it's almost a like-for-like swap as well. It is worrying, because we're not seeing it at all, are we? Just one quick word from me about the game. The fans, I thought the fans were pretty good. We obviously turned up, there was over 1,000 fans there. Lots of positive songs. There was a few negative ones, but again, it was a minority. It was very quiet and sort of expected, I guess, when you put a performance on like that. The one disappointing thing that we have seen is allegedly there was a racist Posh fan making comments about one of the Posh players. I'd just like to say that whilst it is a police matter, well done to the fans that came forward and reported it to the steward, because you see it quite often, don't you, where videos get put online about racist fans. Someone's got the balls to get their phone out and film racist, not just in football, but in public in general. And the comments are always, why didn't you report this? Why didn't you report this? But yesterday, we've not seen any videos of this happening, but we have seen, I think, two different people say that they've reported it to the steward. So well done, those two.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? Something just doesn't seem right in the fan base at the moment. And Charlie's mentioned it and said that it feels like there's a civil war going on amongst the fans. And yesterday really did sum it up. It was a very weird away day. And it's sort of been weird the whole of 2026, where there's just like sections of the fans, isn't there? And it's like, well, they're not involved with us, and we're not this, and they're not that, and all of that sort of stuff. That if somebody has racially abused a Posh player, what a fucking disgrace that is. Let's call it out for what it is. And if you're saying that there's one or two lads that have mentioned it, fair play to them, yes. But actually, shame on the other people. That, no doubt, he's not on his own, is he? He's brought his friends. Shame on his friends for not calling him out on it and telling him that actually, that's not right. That's a disgrace. That shouldn't be said. There's no way to justify it. Like, there just is simply no way, whether it's your own player, whether it's an opposition player, whether it's the officials, whether it's your manager, whether it's another fan, whether it's another fan of your own team. There's no way to justify it. And it really feels like the fan base is on a negative at the moment. And I can't really understand why. I don't know whether it's this upbringing of pretend fake ultras, like we've seen it, haven't we? We've had it during the week, lads. People telling them a time will come. What does that even mean? Like, just get on with it. Like, just support the football team. It's not that difficult. And yeah, just it was a bad day. And yeah, summed up by the fact that people think that they can allegedly say things like that.
Yeah, I absolutely echo your thoughts. And I think basically now the best thing to do is let the police deal with it. And if there is any action that needs to be taken, hopefully if they are found guilty of what they're accused of, it needs to be severe consequences. I don't ever want to see them back at Peterborough United again. And I think pretty much everyone in the fan base would collectively agree with that. I do want to move us on quickly to Barnsley, because we are not doing a countdown to kickoff for this episode, given that this is now Sunday and we simply would not have time to do another countdown to kickoff. So we're going to preview the Barnsley game in this episode. Ash, I'm going to come to you first on this. What are we doing with the starting lineup? Are you playing George Nevitt again? Are you playing Luka Mendonca? And is there any other changes that you can see in the team that you want to make?
This is a remarkably difficult question. And I think that we may see our first change in system. I think that Williams changing to the back five was a precursor for what may happen on Tuesday night. I'm not well versed in Barnsley strikers. I know that they've lost the lad that's gone to Wrexham. But one man that I do know that they have is David McGoldrick, and he is going to offer all of the same things that we've seen in games where we've struggled. He's a big physical striker. He knows the game well. He knows how to play football and knows how to win those battles. And I would love for us to be able to say, right, David Kagbu, you're on David McGoldrick. You mark him for 90 minutes, but we know that's not how McGoldrick plays football. He moves around the back four. And I think that it's going to be a game where we have to see support. if Kyoso's fit and well, do you play him at centre-back? Potentially, he didn't do a bad job, did he, at Stevenage alongside Mendonca? But I'm just massively concerned about the exposure of Mendonca and equally the exposure of George Nevitt. I don't want either of those players to be thrown into what is already a very deep end without some buoyancy alongside them. And whilst we've all said it, David Kagwa is probably our best fit defender at the moment. We saw yesterday that he's not a leader on the pitch. So I think that you need to put a leader in that back four. And I think that Kyoso is probably the only leader that you can see. Does James Dornelli need to come out? It's kind of like how deep. I'm going to make a joke. Dara, please don't hate me. Dara says that Luke Williams rings him up and goes, Dara, talk to me about Pemi. Dara, talk to me about David. Well, very quickly, it's going to be, Dara, talk to me about the under 14 centre-back that we've got because I've got no one fucking fit to play and I love using my academy. So how low can we go? Like, Lodge, you mentioned Claxton earlier. I think that there's a chance that he's got to be in the squad because we need the backup. We need the support. And that's all that we've got.
Yeah, I was trying to work out what back line we put out on Tuesday. I think what you've said there with the back five might be a winner. Presuming that Kyoso's back fit again, I'd have him at right wing back. I think I'd have James Dornelli at right centre back. I know you probably won't have that leadership in the back there, but I think having Big Dave in the middle with George Nevitt and James Dornelli either side of him is not great, but I think it's probably a bit better than playing Nevitt or Mendonca in a back four. We'll then have the ability to have Mendonca on the bench, which might stop us from having to recall Claxton. On Claxton, he's getting experience with men's football. I think that's where I am with it. George Nevitt looks like he could do with that. And I think Mendonca could probably do with that as well. So it would be nice to see Claxton tested at some point between now and then. But I think the answer to the backline question is we just go for a back five and risk it and see what happens, because every other option seems bleak to me. I don't think there is a right answer. I don't think there's one that I'm confident with at all.
Well, I'm not calling for full-scale changes to the formation. I think the four at the back has served us pretty well since Williams came in, and I'm going to stick with it. I would bring Kyoso back if he's got over his illness, and I'd play him at right back. And I think I would bring Mendonca in to play him alongside Akagwe. I understand that's not ideal, but Barnsley aren't quite as physical as a Stevenage or a Bradford. And when I look at Mendonca on the ball, I think he looks great. And probably the same could be said of Nevitt, that it's more of a game that his flaws probably won't be exposed so much. I mean, he's got Tom Bradshaw, I think, and Goldrick, which aren't exactly lightning quick strikers as well. So it may be a game that suits both our centre-halves a little bit better. But clearly, you would rather have somebody else there at this stage of their careers than having to put them through it again. Johnson starts left back for me. I'd go Collins and Keller again in the midfield. And actually, I don't think there's masses of changes that need to be made up front. I think the only one that I would be tempted with just to have a look at him is Declan Frith. Ash, you mentioned it earlier. I'm not sure that his performances off the bench necessarily warrant a start. And I'm not sure I've seen enough from him. But on the same token, if we're making decisions for next season now, which there will be some people that are saying we've still got a shot at the playoffs. We're 5 points off it, and we were 5 points off it at the start of Bradford, so things haven't moved. But ultimately, I think we're now chasing one team, which is Huddersfield, and we've still got a Luton in between us. You know, there's some good teams just on the verge of those playoffs that we would have to outperform, which I personally don't think we can do over the remaining games and overcome the deficit. So my thinking is next season now. And I think we're going to need to have a look at Frith for some point. And I think maybe Barnsley on a Tuesday night when the team's a little bit tired and leggy might be an option.
Yeah, John, you mentioned where we're at. And I tried to work it out as a worst case scenario. And obviously I've not looked and compared the teams. But yes, we are in 10th, but actually we're in 14th. So when you look at the games in hand, and to get up to sixth, you're basically meaning that you've got to get ahead of, you've got to be better than eight teams that are, or well, maybe probably even nine, actually, if the math is right, eight or nine, whatever it is. You've got to be better than all of those teams and match and be better than all of their results. And that's a lot of teams to be better than over, 14 games? Because all of a sudden we've gone from where we had loads of games in hand on people. Now we're the team that's played the most in the league. Like, there's teams that have still played like 28 games. I think Barnsley are one, for example. They're all the way down in 16th potentially. they've got four games in hand on us, I think it is, because they've obviously gone on FA Cup runs and stuff. So I think there needs to be a realization that because we didn't go for it in January, that that was an acceptance that the playoffs was never really realistic and was never really a realistic challenge. And now we do need to start pre-planning. Whilst, let's say that there's a chance that we can still get the playoffs, that means that there's still, because it's not over until it's over, right? Until it's mathematically not possible. So go into that with the thought of, right, these players, you need to go and win the game, because very quickly you become, well, we're playing for nothing. And we saw what happened last season when we were playing for nothing in the last three games. The players were shit. So we need to, whilst there is still some jeopardy, relegation, playoffs, we need to start seeing these players in what are important games for Peterborough United.
I don't know too much about Barnsley. You would have expected them to be quite high up the table, challenging for a playoff place. I think they've had a disappointing season. I know they've got games in hand, but you mentioned it there, Ashley. Their biggest goal threat in Keeler Dunn's just left them. He's actually contributed 28% of their goals this season. So it shows how reliant they were on him to get their goals. And in terms of their goals conceded, I see Callum Fowler tweets a lot about Barnsley having the worst defence in the league. I've just looked how many they've conceded this season. They've conceded 49. Doncaster are the only team that are worse than them, and they've conceded 50. And considering Doncaster have played two more games as well, you probably would suggest that Barnsley have the worst defence in the league. So there's definitely an opportunity there for us to win. I think if we can get our in-possession stuff correct and our attacking phases right, I think it might be a high-scoring game, but I think there is every chance that we come out on top.
Lodge, you've preempted me. I might as well throw it straight back at you. What is your score prediction then?
Sod it. I'm going to go for a 4-3 Posh win. And first goal scorer, let's go for... I'll be boring again this week. I'll go for Harry Leonard.
Well, I... Barnsley drew 3-3 at the weekend, right? I'm going to go... Yeah, let's go 3-3 as well. High scoring game. It's going to be entertaining, isn't it? Like, realistically, we've been very backs to the wall the last two games. Yes, Wigan, the game before that, we were free flowing and enjoyed ourselves. So I think that there's a chance that we get back to that. And I am going to put Declan Frith as my first goal scorer because I think that he's going to have a chance and he's going to enjoy the space that Barnsley are leaving behind. Lodge, you've said that they've got the worst defence in the league. So yeah, let's go and score some goals and Declan Frith can do that. And then maybe he'll do a backflip in front of the away end.
I actually think we might win as well. I know we're down to the bare bones at the minute, but I think what I'm seeing now is that Posh will play quite well against teams that will give you space in transition, that will allow you to counter, allow you to play a bit of football and won't go ultra high press and ultra aggressive against you. And then we struggle against the teams that are big physical powerhouses. Barnsley are not that, in my opinion. So I think we could certainly play... It's certainly a game that suits us a bit more. Our record at Barnsley, I feel like, is not bad over the last few years. We seem to always get a decent result there. So I'm going to go 3-1 Posh. I think we're going to win. I'm actually relatively confident about it. I know we haven't looked great recently, but hopefully the players can get a bit of recovery in before Tuesday night. And I'm going Harry Leonard to score first, because who else am I going to pick?
Yeah. You say recovery, it's thick and fast, isn't it? And three away games on the bounce is going to shaft us. So I hope it's exciting. I just think that we've got to make changes, because there were some players that were dead on their heels yesterday. And I mean, I know the options are limited and we're saying that the bench looks weak, but how quickly can Garbutt be back? How quickly can Harley Mills be back? How quickly can Sam Hughes be back? The real concern and problem that I have is that we sign these players off being fit too early and then we rush them back and then they get injured again. And that's my major concern. So if it meant going through a little bit of hardship, that's how it makes us sound incredibly entitled. But if it does genuinely mean that we have to play like the under 21s and the under 18s, just to mean that the first teamers are given longer to recover, then I think that that's just something that we need to sacrifice, because I don't want more long-term injuries.
I am totally with you, Ash. And I think it's important to remember, we're kind of saying, oh, we might not make the playoffs now. I'm being a little bit disappointed about that. After the first few games of the season, if we were talking about a playoff push, we would all be absolutely delighted. So it shows how well Luke Williams has done to get us to this point that we're all kind of saying, oh, the season's derailed and it's over by, what, February? I definitely would have taken the season being over in February come October time, because it looked like we were going to be stuck in a relegation dogfight for the entirety of it.
The season was going to be over in February and October, but it was going to be because we were going to be relegated with a record low points.
Yeah, you're not wrong. You're not wrong. Anyway, this has been like a super long episode. We're a bumper edition for you. Hopefully, if you are going up to Barnsley, it'll give you some entertainment on there. Or if you're listening on Monday morning, then hopefully it'll get you to work or whatever. Hopefully you've enjoyed. I know it was a difficult game to cover given that Posh didn't have too much to celebrate. But we will be back on Wednesday when we will be reviewing the Barnsley game, and hopefully that will be another win to cover. So up the Poshcast.
Up the Poshcast.